just had some really good players. You know, a couple of those classes never lost a game in their lifetime, 7th grade, 8th grade through high school. And they were just super athletes. They really cared. They really liked each other. And they did things that they didn't want to do in order to make sure they accomplished what they wanted to accomplish.
That's a coaching legend right there, folks. Roger Barta, former head coach of Smith Center football team, a Kansas Hall of Famer. We had a Kansas Hall of Famer on yesterday, John Bingesser. Another one today on our Coaches Week Rewind, as Coach Barta will join us coming up here at the bottom of the hour to talk about his coaching career. And you don't want to miss this. It'll be interesting. I know there's some things that Dusty told me during this interview they recorded the other day that made him laugh a little bit. And so, you know, when you retire, you might tell you a little bit more than when you're actually still coaching. So, Coach Barta, our guest coming up in little bit here at the bottom of the hour. Other local sports information, Dusty.
Yeah, the Kansas Wrestling Coaches Association has announced their all-academic award winners. Team ranks in 3-2-1A, Andy Nemchek's group at Beloit was given a first-team award, as was the Smith Center team coached by Brock Hutchinson. Individual all-academic awards from the KWCA are only eligible for juniors and seniors from Beloit in 3-2-1A. Creighton Johnson and Hunter Prohaska were on the first team, as well as Jackson Pinckney and Jacob Conrad of Smith Center, and Trey Barrientes of Sylvan Lucas. Honorable mention, all academic selections from the area, Mason Fuller and Landon Cato from Beloit, as well as Colton Shoemaker and Brawl Spies of Smith Center. The full KWC all academic selections can be found at ncksports.com. And then also over the weekend, Hayes Daily News, all area basketball teams were announced, and Osborne Steel Walters, a third team pick on the boys' side, and honorable mention picks from the area, Wyatt Everly of Lakeside, Darian Holloway of Osborne, Jonah Hill of Sylvan Lucas, and Trenton Colby from Smith Center. Then in the girls' all-area from Hayes Daily, Brennan Kirkhoff of Thunder Ridge on the second team, Talon Rentler of Smith Center third team. And honorable mention with Grace Grady of Lakeside, Ryan Brown and Trinity Looters of Osborne, Jaden Bowden from Thunder Ridge, Keely Kenobi of Sylvan Lucas, and Bree Freeling from Smith Center. So all that information can be found right at your fingertips there, ncksports.com.
All righty. Well, the big news today when it comes to sports, the newest news, is that the longest tenured Kansas City Chief is no longer a Chief. Dustin Colquitt has been released by Kansas City Chiefs, the Chiefs punter, for the last 15 years. His initial statement was certainly top-of-the-line classy. I've enjoyed my time in Chiefs Kingdom. All things come to an end, sometimes sooner than you hoped, prayed, and pleaded for them, too. I'll miss walking into the building and smelling the coffee, talking to everyone. It took me forever to weave through some of the most loving people you'd ever hope to work with. I was a young kid when I first walked into Arrowhead. The indoor facility used to be 70 yards. Holding this post for 15 years has been an honor that I never took for granted. Thank you, KC. That seemed to be pretty cool. But then later on, he tweeted, "Not my terms. This is tough." Sounds like he liked to punt somewhere else. Go somewhere else, as long as it's not with the Raiders, the Broncos, or the Chargers, even though Dustin Colquitt was a declining punter. Here's the thing that cracks me up is I don't understand. I mean, a lot of people here on social media, and there's even this Matt Connor with Arrowhead Addict, they seem all shocked and surprised that Dustin Colquitt was let go by the Chiefs. You and I have talked about this before, and neither one of us is surprised by this. I mean, yeah, was there a chance that they would have at least let him compete to keep his job in training camp? Yeah. Was there a chance they let him fulfill his final year of his contract at, what, $2.5 million or somewhere abouts? Yeah, but this should not be a surprise. This should not be a shock. And if you actually follow, I'm not trying to take a shot at anybody personally out there that's a fan of the Chiefs. You have things to do in your life, okay? That's why you have us on the show, to try to help you with this. What I'm saying is I am surprised by some of the people in the media that cover the Chiefs on a regular basis. I don't understand what's so surprising about this. Shock is a term that's overused in our today's society. Just way overused. Amazing, shocked, courage. Those words are way overused. And once you use them too much, they kind of become dull, don't they?
Yeah.
And this is dull to me in regards to shocked, surprised. You know, no. This is not the timing of it last night. Okay, whatever. That surprised you, the timing of it. But the writing was on the wall, man. The Chiefs are up against the cap. We even talked about that was a guy they could cut. We mentioned in regards to saving some money on the cap, a declining punter who's up there in age. And he'd had a few injuries here and there. Now, I'll tell you what, I think the Chiefs are going to miss him more as a holder.
Yeah.
Than
yeah.
they will as a punter. That's one thing we got to keep in mind is that he was the holder for extra points and field goals. So Harrison Butker's got to work out a rapport with another guy that's going to hold. But the writing was on the wall, man. If you're shocked by this as a media person covering the Chiefs, I don't know where you've been. I mean, you've had plenty of time to, you know, study and stay at home with stay-at-home orders. It's clear that this was the plan for the Chiefs. I mean, very clear. One, it was his last year of his contract. Two, they're up against the cap with the space. Three, they brought in Tyler Newsome, a free agent punter who had been with the Chargers last training camp, so we knew that was competition. Last year, they brought in Jack Fox, a free agent, who he was an impressive younger player that competed for the job. They've just brought in Florida's Tommy Townsend as a rookie free agent here just recently. So they already have two punters they're bringing in. Do you really think Dustin Colquitt was the future at punter? No. And they usually don't bring in competition, but the last couple of years they have. And I thought there was a chance he wouldn't be the punter last year. But if you know, Dustin Colquitt's done great things in the community, and when you lose a long-tenured person of an organization, you do feel, you know, sad about it, and you maybe feel sorry for the person, especially if it's not on their terms. And I don't. And this is not anything against Dustin Colquitt at all. It's a business, and that sounds callous. But here's the reason I don't feel sorry for Dustin Colquitt. I would have felt sorry for Dustin Colquitt if he was cut before last year.
Mm-hmm.
Then I would feel sorry for him because he would have been with the Chiefs all those years, and then he is cut, and then they win the Super Bowl. I do feel sorry, to an extent, for Justin Houston because he put on a time with the Chiefs, and then the year after, they win a Super Bowl.
Eric Berry's at the top of my list, and I know he was declining.
But wasn't even playing.
Yeah, and he wasn't playing. But yeah. I just wish he would have been able to get that ring, you know.
Yeah.
That's the only thing about it, you know.
For me, Justin Houston's a bigger thing because he actually was on the field.
Yeah.
Berry was always hurt. But I'm cool with that. Yeah, Berry, Houston. I could even say D. Ford, you know, a guy that, you know, played well during his career with the Chiefs. And, you know, you kind of he could have got a little redemption if he was on the team this year, won a Super Bowl after the offsides. I mean, if you have a bit of a heart. But I don't feel sorry for Dustin Colquitt. Here's why. Dustin Colquitt's position is to go and punt the football. And with this Chiefs offense last few years, and let's remember Trent Green in the offense was pretty doggone good there for a while too.
Mm-hmm.
Dustin Colquitt didn't have to punt as much as a lot of punters in the league. He didn't have to tackle very often. He held the football and didn't get hit, except when they botched it against Tennessee this year. He got paid he made $34 million to kick the football into the sky and hold it for a kicker to kick it through the uprights. And his last year, he won a Super Bowl ring. That's the best way to go out, man.
Yeah.
You got your ring. And so, like I said, if you rewind to last year at this time and he was cut, I'd feel sorry for him a little bit because, oh, man, the Chiefs are going to win a Super Bowl. But he got his ring, $34 million. He had 15 years with the team. If he wants to go somewhere else, I have no problem with it. But if you're going to sit here, you know, if Dustin Colquitt was at the top of his game, the best punter in the league, the Chiefs wouldn't be cutting him right now. He's not. He has declined. Age catches up with everyone. It is a business. I know it sounds rough and callous, but he has 34 million reasons plus a Super Bowl ring to be extremely happy and then focus on trying to find a new job. And if he doesn't, he had a heck of a career.
Oh, yeah. He's not going to be like, this is a bad career because I just got cut by the Chiefs after all this time. You know, if I was going to go out and walk off into the sunset and retire as a punter.
Perfect time.
This is it. That's the way to just cap off a career and a great career at that.
He was drafted in 2000.
See you later.
He was drafted in 2005 and third round punter. That's not, you don't hear that anymore.
No.
And he spent the 15 seasons with the team. He was a two-time Pro Bowler, Super Bowl champion now, has a record for longest punt with the Chiefs in history with 81. His yards in regards to his punting, last year 44.3 was average. As long was 68. He had one blocked. He wasn't as good as pinning teams inside the 10 as he used to be, but his average wasn't like way off. But in his prime, Dustin Colquitt would average 45, 47 yards a punt. He was down to 44.3, which is the lowest of his career since his second season. So for his lowest punting average in 13 years was last year. And I'm not saying he was horrendous, but he wasn't what he once was. But remember, he's 37.
Yeah.
And Father Time catches up with all of us. So He set a Chiefs franchise record most games played, surpassing former teammate Will Shields last year. He had a heck of a career. Now, to put this in perspective, how long has Dustin Colquitt been with the Chiefs? He played through, these are the head coaches he played for: Dick Vermeil, Herm Edwards, Todd Haley, Romeo Crennel, and Andy Reid. Five head coaches, four general managers. But he capped it off with a Super Bowl title. Now, you want to hear the different starting quarterbacks that Dustin Colquitt played for with the Chiefs and played with?
Yeah.
We're talking starting quarterbacks,
yeah.
All right? You know, for these people like, oh, yeah, the Chiefs deserve Patrick Mahomes. Let me go through this list. The Cleveland Browns deserve an unbelievable quarterback ever since Bernie Gosar, by the way, too. Trent Green, pretty good. Damon Heward, Brody Croyle, Tyler Thigpen, Tyler Palko, Matt Cassel, Kyle Orton, Brady Quinn, Chase Daniel, Nick Foles, Matt Moore, Alex Smith, Patrick Mahomes. The three best ones: Green, Smith, and Mahomes. He ended with Mahomes. That's a lot of starting quarterbacks over the course of 15 years.
Yeah.
Chiefs finally got the guy that they developed, and now he's 24 and in his prime, and that quarterback helped get him a ring in his final year with the Chiefs. I'm sorry, you can call me insensitive, but I don't feel sorry for a guy that's made $34 million, won a Super Bowl ring, spent 15 years of organization, who did great things. This is nothing personal against Dustin Colquitt. I'm sure he's an unbelievable guy. And if I were Dustin Colquitt, it would be bittersweet. It would be tough.
Oh,
you'd spend your whole career at the Chiefs. So I understand the emotions of all that. But he's much better off than most people in this world today. So I'm sorry, I'm not shedding a tear that Dustin Colquitt was cut by the Chiefs. Or, oh my gosh, he should have had a chance to keep his job this training camp. Or, why didn't they let him fulfill his contract? He had one more year left. They gave him 15, people. And I could argue he could have been gone the last couple years.
Yeah, yeah. And a lot of people thought when Jack Fox came in that might be it for him.
Right.
Now, you gave the list there, and you know the days of Castle, Palko, and Thigpen, and Croyle. He was probably the MVP.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, he punted so much.
That's right. That's
and
true.
And he did his job, and you know he helped out his defense a lot. But like you said, you know the front and back end of his careers,
right.
He didn't have to punt as much. One of the things at the front end of his career, people were trying to figure out a left-footed punter, too, so he would force a lot of muffs, you know,
right.
At the beginning of that, and until people kind of got used to that and seeing the way it was coming in. So it was always unique, you know, early on when he was starting out. But, yeah, he was the MVP there for a stretch. There's no question about it.
Well, interesting, he had some nagging injuries here and there, but he hadn't missed a game since 2008.
Yeah.
And in regards to the punts, in 2007, he punted it 95 times. 2009, 96 times. 2013, Chiefs had good offense in 87. But last
that
2 years.
The first year
right.
With Reed, yeah.
Right. The last 2 years, 45 and 48.
Yeah.
So the last 2 years combined, 93.
Yeah.
And in 07, 95. And in 09, he punted 96. So early in his career, some wear and tear. Middle of his career, you know, quite some. And then the last couple of years, this is a guy that should have got another year or two out of his leg, and maybe that's what happened, is he got last year because he didn't have to punt much in 18.
Mm-hmm.
So Chiefs will have a new punter and have a new holder. And the holder could be a backup quarterback, you know, by the way. It doesn't have to be the punter. So I think that's the bigger concern for me. I think they'll get a punter that'll be all right, good enough. And by the way, how valuable is a punter if he doesn't have to go punt very much with the best offense in football?
Yeah.
And you just picked up maybe the best running back in the draft.
Yeah.
Which leads me to the next point of discussion here on the ticket. Roger Barta coming up here in about 5 to 10 minutes. I talked about the Chiefs draft yesterday. You got here, you had an appointment, and you got here right after the show. So I'll give you the opportunity. Your thoughts on the Chiefs draft and what draft pick intrigues you the most, and which draft pick of the Chiefs do you think it was the best pick?
I'm picking Gay on both of them for some reason.
I tend to agree with you.
Yeah, it intrigues me the most because I want to see Izzy do the right things, first of all.
I
think he will. You know, typically they do all right with that.
His background isn't anything close to Tyreek Hill or other Chiefs players that have been on this team.
Not at all. And so that's always what people want to talk about right away.
Mm-hmm.
But I think they'll be fine with the room that he's in. And then, that's what I wanted. we've been talking about an athletic linebacker for a couple years now, you know, somebody that can replace a guy like Derek Johnson. And I think he's got the same kind of skill sets from when you look at film. Obviously, you got to let that play out and see how it's going to play out. But I think Willie Yeast the answer to both of those questions for me. I'm very intrigued, and I think he will pan out to be something pretty good for this defense that, that Spags is running.
I like the top three picks.
And I really like all of it.
I agree. Yeah. I agree with you, though. I think the most intriguing pick is Gay. I think the best pick based on value was Gay.
Yeah.
In the second round. I like Niang in the third round. Uh-huh. I think that's a guy that could be pretty good for the Chiefs. Maybe not this year, but in a couple of years. I think we talked about how they needed to maybe replace Mitchell Schwartz eventually. He's going to be 31 in a few months. There's the heir apparent replacement. He can provide depth on the line. I like what the Chiefs did. You know, they didn't get a corner until the fourth round, but I kind of fell along. They weren't going to draft a corner in the first round because they brought Breland back. Had they not, I think they might have gone corner in that first round. Mm-hmm. Hilaire, a lot of people say they could have got a running back that was, you know, later on in the draft and got better value at the 32nd pick. Listen, I think he's a perfect fit for the Chiefs' offense. I'm excited. It looks like he's going to wear 25. Jamal Charles was a pretty good running back in wearing 25. I'm excited about Hilaire and what he can do. So I'm intrigued by the draft. I think the Snead kid in the fourth round, I don't know if I expect much this upcoming year, but a 4.37 40, he's got speed. He's got some size at 6'1". The Chiefs have always had small corners, and now Spagnuolo wants to go bigger corners. Mm. You see that with Ward and Breland, and now they ain't going to draft some short guy. I like the way they're going there. I think that's a guy that in a couple of years could end up being a really good corner. And by the way, according to Gil Brandt, the Chiefs got the best undrafted free agent lineman and the best undrafted free agent wide receiver. So there's guys they picked up, 18 different guys they signed are undrafted. A couple of those guys could pan out and do pretty good. And we always get caught up in the draft and how you grade it. Well, part of the draft, extension of the draft, is the undrafted free agents.
You get when it's done, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, the Chiefs got Tommy Townsend, a punter. He might end up being their punter and beating out Tyler Newsome. Mm-hmm. Or they'll bring in somebody else. I thought the Chiefs draft, based on how many picks they had, you know, got another corner later in the seventh round. I don't know what he'll do, but I thought all in all, the Chiefs had a pretty decent draft based on the amount of picks they got, and they filled the needs that you and I discussed they had, which weren't glaring, huge, unbelievable big voids or holes. But the biggest one to me was inside linebacker, speed, side to side. Gay brings them that. And then corner, which they addressed in the fourth round. And then on top of that, they got a running back that I never thought they'd get that would fit this offense so well. So I like what they did.
I top to bottom, it was perfect for me, as close as it can be from what I've seen with past Chiefs drafts and what you go in thinking and wanting.
Absolutely.
That's the best one I've ever seen, I think.
I think they had better drafts, but that was the best
based on
what they needed.
Based on everything we were talking about. You know,
makes it
a lot
easier.
Of times it's like, you know, they pick the guy they don't really need any. You know, they pick, you know, the best available on their board, and then it's the guy that might not pan out.
But let me play devil's advocate for just a moment. If the Chiefs hadn't won the Super Bowl, would you feel as good about this draft? I'll bet you wouldn't.
No.
Because you want to get over the hump, and so there's even more pressure to get that right, perfect draft pick to get you over the hump.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas, and I think that's what's happened. I think you and me are guilty of this, and that's not a bad thing. I think a lot of us Chiefs fans are like, well, you know, Andy Reid and Brett Veach, they know what they're doing. They won a Super Bowl. They drafted Mahomes. They traded up 3 years ago, which, by the way, 3 years ago yesterday, the Chiefs made the best move they've ever made in their organizational history, and that was drafting Patrick Mahomes and moving up 17 spots. But if they hadn't won it last year, I think our view on this draft would be more critical.
Yeah.
And I think we would be saying, okay, a little bit of reach at running back when we need a big-time linebacker or corner. Or, well, you know, second round, we took a chance on a guy with academic issues and got in a fight with a quarterback. Third round, okay, we got a guy that was a little bit injury-prone that's not going to be starting right away. We need a guy that can start right away to help the line and protect Mahomes. And the fourth round, we got a guy that was a safety that played corner for 3 years, and then he was a safety. He didn't have a good senior year, but he's got the variables in regards to the combine. But will that translate into the field? And so forth and so on. We should have traded out of the first round and got more picks, or we should have traded up to get a guy we really wanted. Like, we should have traded above the Ravens to get Patrick Queen. I think we'd be much more critical of this draft.
Probably.
The Chiefs lost to the Niners in the Super Bowl.
Yeah.
Don't you think?
Probably so, yeah.
And that makes sense. I mean, it's human nature. We have relaxed a little bit because we got that Super Bowl. Even when the Royals won the World Series in 15, we weren't as critical of what they did in the offseason because, like, hey, we got our ring. We're good. Mm-hmm. We got the ring. And then we figured we weren't going to repeat. Now, this team should repeat if they stay healthy next year, but sometimes you need a few breaks here and there too. What team do you think had the best draft? Not that it matters what we think per se, but there's a lot of talk about The Bengals had a really good draft. The Dolphins had a good draft. Well, they should have. They had 1,000 picks. They should have had a good draft. They didn't have a good draft. They really just need to fire everybody upstairs. The 49ers, I thought, had a good draft. They traded and got Trent Williams. They got Emmanuel Sanders in a trade. And then they made some really good picks. I like what they did. The Ravens, I thought, got better. J.K. Dobbins, Ingram's older running back. I think Dobbins is a perfect fit for them, even though he wasn't for the Chiefs. That upset me that Dobbins went to Baltimore. Because I didn't want him for the Chiefs, but I didn't want him to go to Baltimore. And the Cowboys are a team that really, I thought, did pretty well, too. CeeDee Lamb falling in their lap was a big pickup, and they've got a lot of offensive weapons. And the Broncos picked up a lot of speed, as did the Raiders at wide receiver. The Chargers, I think, got the wrong quarterback, but I might be proven wrong in the future. So what do you think? You know, is there a team that stood out to you that is like, wow, man, they just keep getting pick after pick? And how do they
Yeah, nothing that you didn't already mention there. The Cowboys, I think, probably did some good things for themselves. You know, they just need guys that can – because, I mean, they're not that far away from contending. So some of those guys can come in. I guess they can get Prescott on a contract too.
Right.
But, yeah, the Cowboys and then – yeah, I mean, the Bengals, you hope, would have a good draft with the picks that they got.
Well, if Joe Burrow ends up hitting, that's a great draft.
Yeah, exactly. That's right. All you need.
By the way, the greatest Chiefs draft in the history of their organization, I don't care if they have a whole great pick after pick this year or ever again, the greatest draft they ever had was 2017. And that was Patrick Mahomes.
Yeah.
I don't even care who they drafted in that year, except Patrick Mahomes. That was the greatest draft. You don't find a one-of-a-kind franchise quarterback who could be the best of all time. And I say could be. He's got a long way to go, or he could have his injury cut short, you know, in three months. Who knows? Mm-hmm. Just to give you an idea of how people can be wrong about people, and this is why we can't get over-riled up about, oh, man, the Chiefs made a huge mistake, or the Chiefs are brilliant because they did this, or the Cowboys are brilliant, or the Broncos are brilliant, or the Dolphins are brilliant, or, man, the Packers are stupid. Why'd they get Jordan Love? And then watch Jordan Love turn into an All-Pro 5 years from now, and guess what? There are people that are ripping Patrick Mahomes in regards to the Chiefs, so they got the wrong quarterback. What are they doing? He's going to be a bust. Those people look silly and dumb right now, don't they?
Mm-hmm.
Bill Polian, who is the guy I respect, Tyrann Mathieu of the Chiefs, of course, a key part of that defense. Without him, I don't think they win it last year. He was a free agent pickup. He was a third-round draft pick early in the third round in 2013 out of LSU. Now, he had a few issues. Willie Gay has some issues. The linebacker the Chiefs just picked up. Here's Bill Polian 7 years ago, and Tyrann Mathieu retweeted this. I don't know if you saw it.
I didn't yet.
But this is Bill Polian on the draft in 2013 talking about Tyrann Mathieu. Would you draft Tyrann Mathieu? Remember, he went in the third round. Mm-hmm. Back in 2013 who was he drafted
Cardinals,
by? The Arizona Cardinals. Yep. Okay, now he's a Super Bowl champion, leader of a Super Bowl champion defense, highly respected, a leader on the team. We know that now. What were they saying about Tyrann Mathieu? Bill Polian was asked, what do you do with Tyrann Mathieu? Do you draft him in 2013? Here's what he said.
Executive of the year in the NFL, Bill Polian. Bill, you've seen the tape. You've seen the highlight-making plays from Tyrann Mathieu when he was at LSU. Is he worth the risk, in your opinion?
No, in a word. This is a guy who's a nickel back, who's a return man, who has a deficiency covering man-to-man, who's speed deficient. On top of that, he's proven to be irresponsible and continues, in my mind, to show some degree of irresponsibility. That makes him a poor teammate and a poor risk. I don't know why you'd want him at any price. But if you were going to take a chance on him, it certainly wouldn't be tonight, in my mind.
So would you take him in a very late round, or would you consider him an undrafted free agent kind of player?
We would take him off the board because, in our opinion, based on our philosophy, we did not want a player with this level of irresponsibility and this level of disrespect for his teammates and his team, because that's what he showed by failing these tests in our locker room.
All right, Bill, thanks. Bill Polian with the...
And Bill Polian is no longer in the front office of an NFL team. Yeah, okay, interesting. Just go. I mean, I love the conviction. He was very opinionated.
Yeah.
And he ended up being dead wrong. Tyrann Mathieu proved him wrong. Maybe Tyrann Mathieu saw that, and that helped motivate him. Tyrann Mathieu did have some issues coming out of college.
Oh, yeah.
Absolutely. But a team took a chance on him. It worked out, and now he's a leader and an outstanding player. And the Chiefs are so happy to have him, Super Bowl champion. So it just goes to show, don't put too much stock into what some of these talking heads say with the draft, like Mel Kiper, Todd McShay, or in this case, Bill Polian, because you know what? Sometimes they have no better idea than you and I do.
Yeah. I look at the, he has deficiency covering man to man, but I like the, I always go back, he can take three guys out of one play.
Yeah, right.
That video that they showed from the playoffs this year where he just literally took three options out on one play.
He did. He did. I'm glad they have him. Okay, The Last Dance was episodes 3 and 4 was Sunday night. What stands out to you from that? I talked about it yesterday. I won't really regurgitate that, but what were your things that stood out to you?
We were talking about it yesterday. You know, the Rodman stuff was stuff I already knew, so it wasn't really anything brand new, but I always
enjoy. Other than Jordan going, pulling him out of a hotel room, that's interesting.
Yeah, and Carmen Electra
was hiding in the
having
sheets.
To hide, yeah. I enjoyed the fourth episode immensely, though, because it's always fun to go back to that point where they made the turn and they got it done, and they beat the Pistons and you know, beat the big bad bully and knocked them off. And a lot of people, I think, probably that don't understand that think the Bulls were the big bad bully because they won 6 out of 8 championships, but they don't understand what it took for them to get there.
That's right.
And that was my favorite. And I always enjoy watching the Pistons, the way they reacted. And just as Horace Grant said, and I
would
won't say it.
Yeah, I agree with you.
But it's always fun to go back and see that part of it. And it's amazing, really, just to...
It's awesome to watch this
To
thing.
Watch it all.
Isaiah Thomas came out yesterday. He was on an interview, and he was surprised Jordan called him an A.H. And I'm like, Isaiah Thomas, you are so full
what
of...
world do you live
you're
in?
You're so full of baloney. He's not surprised. He's doing that for the... Isaiah Thomas panders to people sometimes, but he didn't pander... I respect Isaiah Thomas. He was a heck of a basketball player. He was fun to watch. And he got beat up. He's a little guy that went in and got beat up and this and that. But this is a guy that doesn't take any responsibility for his actions when it comes to things he did wrong. I mean, it was wrong to not shake the hands of the Bulls walking off that floor in Detroit. And then he blames the Celtics. He throws Lambert under the bus, which, by the way, Lambert yesterday, and that's a guy that ain't going to change his tune until he dies.
Absolutely not.
He said, listen, the Bulls were a whole bunch of whiners, blah, 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 da, 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 da. I don't regret doing anything. And it's like, okay, that's fine.
Yeah, whatever. Be serious. If Isaiah would come out and say that, would respect
right. I would respect that more. Honestly. I mean, Isaiah says don't regret doing it. It's just that, you know, in hindsight, we probably shouldn't have, or it was unsportsmanlike, blah, blah, blah. But he doesn't really regret doing it. But he just throws it like it was Lambert's idea, which I still don't think it was. I think it was both their idea. And then he acts like, and he says, I paid a heavy price for that. Well, yeah, because you got kept off the Dream Team. Because of what you did, and you ticked off Jordan in 90, you hugged, and Jordan approached you and hugged you and this and that after they lost game 7 to the Pistons. And then the Pistons, after all their success, decided to walk off before the game's even over and don't even acknowledge the Bulls bench. And that was in 91. And in 92 is a Dream Team. And what do you know? Well, sometimes how does that go? What you reap is what you sow, or how are that as worded?
What you sow,
karma, what goes around comes around. That's what happened. And by the way, there are a lot of people say that Isaiah Thomas wasn't the next guy in line for the Dream Team. It was actually his teammate, Joe Dumars. Mm-hmm. And Joe Dumars was actually probably more respected than anybody on that team, to be quite honest with you. And I'm just laughing when I see Isaiah Thomas say these all these things. I'm like, Isaiah, the reason that the Jordan wasn't the only person you had a beef with or that has a beef with you. This is the same person that said the only reason Larry Bird is a great player is because he's white. Isaiah Thomas said that. Not Bill Laimbeer, not Michael Jordan. That was Isaiah Thomas. Isaiah Thomas also, Magic Johnson basically spurned him. And they were used to be good buddies and friends. And then once Magic came out with the whole announcement, and then there was some issues between Magic and Isaiah Thomas. In regards to, and Magic wasn't really happy with Isaiah and some of the things that he was saying or not saying. There are a lot of guys that had a beef with Isaiah Thomas that didn't like him. Then after what he did in New York, which was a mess, and of course his shady things he did with, you know, and there's other players that have done it. I'm not going to get in specifics here, but he's been sued before and this and that and whatever else. You know, Isaiah Thomas isn't the most, you know, I'm not saying nobody's perfect, but Isaiah Thomas, there's many reasons why he, in essence, got punished for, it wasn't just for that he did in 91. Mm-hmm. There were other things he did. Jordan isn't the only one that thinks he's an A.H., let's just put it that way, okay? And so, I don't feel sorry for Isaiah Thomas. You reap what you sow. He did that. He chose to do that. And, you know, for him to say he's surprised that Jordan thinks of him that way is just ludicrous and ridiculous. And Isaiah, we're not that stupid. We don't buy it. And just another lie from Isaiah Thomas, you know? That's just how it was, you know. You didn't shake hands. That's just how the torch wasn't passed in that way. The Bulls shook your hands 2 years in a row. The Celtics back in 88 should have no impact on what you do in 91. No, by the way, the Bulls beat you by 20. What was it? They beat you good in game 4 and swept you that year. You got your butt kicked. the Bulls got their butt kicked 2 years before that, and the year before they got beaten in Game 7. They had every right in the world to just run off and whine. You know, Laimbeer says whiny, calls the Bulls whiny, and they did. They whined and complained because they got beat up. But after they lost in 90, they worked their butts off, got in the weight room, quit whining in 91, and didn't yell at the officials and didn't get into fights with the Pistons. They just got up when they got fouled hard, and they grew up and matured. And you know who ended up being the whiny you-know-whats at the very end of that in 1991? It was Bill Laimbeer and Isaiah Thomas by the fact that they walked off the floor and didn't shake the hands or didn't even look or acknowledge, and sheepishly you see Isaiah kind of, you know, hunkering down, you know, lowering his shoulders and his head as he's walking out. I mean, you could tell he was almost new. His body language was like he was embarrassed by what he was doing, and he knew it, but he didn't care.
Yeah.
I'm like, you know, there are ramifications and consequences to your actions, and if you don't like it, well, either fess up to it and say, I totally made a mistake, or stand by it, as you said. But what he does instead is he blames the Celtics in 88 because that's what they did, which is not completely true because he left out a detail. And that is that Detroit, there was concern of the safety of the Celtics because that game was in Detroit, and Detroit finally got over the hump. Whereas the Pistons, they weren't worried about court storming. That game was in Detroit when the Bulls swept them. That's a different scenario, of course. And it's just, I don't believe a single word Isaiah Thomas utters out of his mouth. I didn't then, and I don't now, and he hasn't changed. And you can say, well, you're a Jordan fan, that's why you say that. No, I don't care if it's Jordan, whoever. This is a guy that said some very controversial things, who was a great player, and then was basically blackballed out of being on the Dream Team because he created that situation for himself.
Yeah.
And you can say, well, two wrongs don't make a right, and you're right. That's true. But I don't blame Jordan for, you know, Jordan hasn't technically admitted it. I don't blame Jordan. I mean, remember who the head coach of the Dream Team was in 92. It was Isaiah Thomas's head basketball coach of the Pistons.
Yeah.
So if Chuck Daly didn't feel strong enough to vouch for Isaiah Thomas to be on that team, and they chose Stockton instead of Isaiah Thomas or Joe Dumars, and Jordan had a big role in it, you're upset with Jordan? I would be looking at Chuck Daly, who no longer is with us. He passed away, a great coach. I think that tells you what you need to know about Isaiah Thomas. Chuck Daly didn't go to bat, I don't think, for Isaiah Thomas to be on that Dream Team, because he knew, one, I don't need him on here. I don't need the headaches of Jordan and him not getting along. And we got Stockton. We're good. We got a whole bunch of Hall of Famers in the future going to be on this Dream Team. But people getting mad about Jordan for keeping Thomas off the Dream Team. Whether he did or he didn't, I truly believe he did. He helped make sure. I think Jordan said, listen, I'm not going to be on the Dream Team if Isaiah's on this team. And, of course, the NBA's like, oh, God, no.
Yeah.
We got to have Jordan.
Well, and he probably has some backing a little bit from Bird and Magic.
Bird was also on that team.
And Magic
exactly.
was, too.
So I think they collectively blackballed Isaiah. I don't think
like,
it was just
Michael
Jordan.
Hey, Mike, I'll stand by you here
right.
on this, you know, because you know Bird would.
Michael Jordan was more respected by Magic and Bird than Isaiah was.
Oh, without doubt.
And Isaiah created some of that.
And, you know, Bad Boy Image created some of that.
Right.
Isaiah
True.
Created some of that himself. I think it was all of that.
I agree. Bottom line is, it worked, though, like Laimbeer said.
Sure,
I mean,
did.
They won a couple championships, and he goes,
You can't argue with the results of what they did, what they accomplished.
No, they won. They're world champions. Isaiah Thomas always be a world champion.
In a row.
So is Bill Laimbeer. Back-to-back years, and if Isaiah didn't get hurt in Game 7 in 88, they might have won three in a row. So, of course, Magic got hurt in one of those series, too. Who knows what would have happened, ifs, ands, and buts. But I just, you know, the Pistons were world champions, and as Laimbeer said, he's right. When he says, we played by the rules. People didn't like it, but the rules were different then. We were allowed to do it. We did it. I don't blame anybody. You play within the rules.
No.
I mean, if they could, you know, crush a guy's spirits by physically just beating him up, if you could do that to LeBron right now or Kevin Durant and it's allowed, why wouldn't you do it?
Yeah.
To see if you can mentally fight through it. Well, here's the thing. You mess with the wrong hombre because Jordan fought through it. And that's the sign of an unbelievable winner and one of the greats of all time. I said one of. It's Michael Jordan, and he made his teammates better because after that loss and after that diss by the Pistons, actually, I think totally helped the Bulls go even further than what they originally were going to do. So thank you is what the Jordan should say to Isaiah, I guess. All right, Roger Barta, Coach's Week Rewind. I think you're going to enjoy this. He's a former head coach at Smith Center, of course, won multiple state championships, and he is a Kansas Hall of Famer. Enjoy this today on The Ticket.
Welcome back here on the Sports Ticket on KD Country 94 and KDCountry94.com. We are pleased to be joined by a legendary coach in the area and a member of many Halls of Fame. Most recently got into the Kansas Football Coaches Association Hall of Fame, Acacia Hall of Famer as well. Roger Barta joining us, the former head coach of the Smith Center Redmond. Coach, we thank you for taking some time. It's been kind of fun with some of the coaches in the area just reminiscing about the past. And I know that you've had a long career and a very successful career, especially with Smith Center. But I want to go back first, Coach, and maybe talk about how you got into this and how you decided, you know, coaching and teaching was going to be your realm. I know you grew up in Plainville and graduated from there in 1963, and then from Fort Hays State in 1967. I guess at what time during all that did you decide, hey, I kind of might want to kind of extend this on and become a teacher and a coach?
Well, I was fortunate in Plainville. We, of course, played every sport available, but there was a coach there named Dow Hargraves, which was kind of a father figure to everybody. And you know, you just kind of figured, well, that's what you were going to do because that's what he did, and he's the one you respected, and just things kind of just fell in place. I don't know how or why, they just did. So that's where we ended up.
What kind of success did you have as an athlete there and your teams there at Plainville when you were in high school?
We were decent. When I was a freshman, our football team was really, really good. That was before the playoffs, I think, We weren't as good when I was a senior, but we had some good years. And it was fun playing with all the same people year after year after year. So
I know you then after high school, as I said, you went to Fort Hays State, graduated there in 67. Kind of went on a journey after that, teaching and coaching at Atwood for a few years. Then you get your master's from the University of Georgia, come back to Kansas. Take me through those few years after college and kind of transitioning and moving into the real world, I guess.
Well, my wife Pam and I were married right after college, and Joe Gray was a superintendent out at Atwood who had been superintendent of Plainville when I was growing, so he offered me a job. We didn't know any better. We didn't have any money, so we went out there and stayed for 3 years. And at that time, during the war, they offered National Science Foundation grants, which we applied for and had our choice to where we wanted to go, but we chose the University of Georgia and received a master's there. And then we didn't have money enough to come back for an interview, so I got hired over the phone at Tonganoxie. So we went there a year, and then we went back to Waukene. And I was real blessed to work with Earl Barber there and some really good coaches. And all of a sudden I had a fraternity brother that was teaching in Smith Center. And he called and said there was a job open at Smith Center. So we came to Smith Center, and we've been here. We were there 35 years, I think.
Yeah. One of the things that you're talking about there, you kind of triggered a question in my mind about wartime, too, because I know my dad he served a year in Vietnam. And what was the culture like at that time going from Kansas to Georgia? Was it a shocking culture, or was everything kind of the same down there?
No, at that time, it was altogether different. Mm-hmm. I saw things I didn't believe would really happen, but my number was real low, and if you were going to be a teacher, you weren't going to be drafted, especially a math teacher. And so I didn't get drafted and didn't go to Vietnam like a lot of my friends did, so I was blessed in that way, I guess.
So coming back to Kansas, Tonganoxie, like you said, for a year, and then you're in Waukene there at Trigo. I want to go over that a little bit because, like you said, and I'm from there, so I know a lot of those names that you're going to talk about. And Earl Barber was actually my Scholars Bowl coach when I was in junior high. So I know that you probably learned a lot there. What were some of the experiences that you enjoyed the most when you're in Waukene and getting you ready, I guess, to take over as a head football coach down the line?
Well, it was just a great experience. Really appreciated Earl. He was a very hardworking, honest, religious man, and he was good for kids. And we had several other. Ron Taha was an assistant coach who had been a Big Eight wrestler, and so we fit together pretty well, and we enjoyed each other and had fun. And he taught me a lot of things the way you should do as far as treating kids and how to educate them and how to discipline them. And so I learned a great deal from him, and I kind of still remember all those things.
You're telling me there was a couple of years there where even before with the playoff system was kind of like, you know, it was a point system, had some pretty good teams there that maybe didn't win state championships because the playoffs weren't alive or maybe because things didn't work out for you, right?
Yeah, we had, I remember at least one team. Yeah, we were really pretty good, and it was a point system at that time in the state, and it depended on whether you won or lost, but then you got more points for beating a team that was over 500. Mm-hmm. So we went into the last game, I remember one year, and we won, but we were more interested in how the other teams did, and they didn't do as well as we hoped they would have done, so we didn't qualify for state, but we were a pretty good football team, though.
So as we said, you had 7 years there in Waukini at Trigo, and then you get the call there to go to Smith Center. Your 32-year record as a head coach there was 323-68, and obviously won some state championships there. But the first thing I want to ask you about, though, is Smith Center. So you had a lot of success, and you ran the wishbone offense, a pretty deceptive offense for a lot of people as they're looking at it. When did you decide that when you became a head coach that wishbone was going to be how you were going to attack teams and try to win games?
Well, it really didn't start out as a wishbone. It was inside belly and outside belly, which is what we put in at Waukini with Earl and Ron Taha. And it was a multiple formation, a lot of motion. We probably had 30 formations and run the plays out of those, but it was all inside belly, outside belly. And when I came to Smith Center, I brought that offense with me, and we used it for several years. And then all of a sudden, I had a running back coming back that had about 2,000 yards. He was going to be a senior. But I had a young man named Jeff Seminole, who was a great athlete. He was also kind of a running back type. Mm-hmm. And then I had a fullback named Brooks Barda. And I was sleeping with his mother, so I'm not sure he was going to play. And so they fit in pretty well, and we went to a wishbone set. But we were still running inside-outside belly, which is what we've always done. But people see it as a wishbone, and they always thought we were running wishbone, which is what wishbone offense is about. So
again, you had a lot of success there at Smith Center. I just kind of want to go over some of the numbers. The state championships in 82, 86, 99, and then you had the long stretch there from 04 to 08 where you won state championships and had the long winning streak, and I'll get to that here during the interview as well. But when you look at this and the success that you're able to have, what's the biggest credit for all that success to be able to sustain that for such a long period?
Well, we were blessed when we came to Smith Center. They hadn't been a real good football team, and they've been average. And so we knew we had to improve. But we tried to sell our program to everybody. You know, we kind of emphasized it takes a community to raise a child. Mm-hmm. And they kind of bought into it here. And our kids, that was the main thing in Smith Center. It was a form of entertainment, and that's where you met people, and socially that's where you went. And it was all about kids, some of it athletics, you know, some music, some drama, a lot of different things. But they were all willing in Smith Center to do whatever they could to help any program that we had at that time. And it made a lot of difference. And then, of course, once things get to going, they kind of build on each other, and it was just assumed that you were going to be a football player. It was assumed you were going to be an athlete. And I remember we had a couple classes where every boy except maybe one or two came out for football. Mm-hmm. And those one or two become the managers. Everybody wanted to be a part of everything. And so that's kind of the way it developed. And then you get tradition going and things just kind of take over. And people are really, really want to help all you can, and anytime I needed a little help with a kid, there was always somebody there that was willing and able to do a good job for a young person.
Again, we're talking with Roger Barta, the longtime head coach of the Smith Center Redmond, now retired and a member of many Hall of Fames here as far as sports are concerned. But so I want to go through some of these state championships. In 1979, you actually played in the state championship game and lost to John Bingesser's Sacred Heart team there in 3A that year. But, you know, a few years later, you're back into it in 1982. You won the 3A title. I guess what were some of the things that you remember about those first couple state championships and finally kind of coming out on top and winning that first title?
Well, when we came to Smith Center, you know, we struggled the first year. I think we were 3-6. And then that's one of two losing seasons we had. But then we had a group of young people that really fit together. and they're the ones that got second in the state. And that's kind of the group of people that got things started. Mm-hmm. And they were special, hard-working, dedicated young people, and they're the ones that kind of turned things around. And once we had that first good season, then it became continuous and just kind of took over from there. No, and of course, we had some good players. They really mm-hmm. were some good players and worked hard and knew what they were supposed to do, and things just kind of took off.
I know 86 was a special season for you as well. Jerry Voorhees used to coach over at Thunder Ridge, and he'd always have that ring to show to his kids when he wanted to win one there at Thunder Ridge, and he finally got it done. And I know he was a member of that team, but 86 was a pretty special year for you, wasn't it?
Yes, it was. They're all special.
Yeah,
but it was a special year. They played really well. A lot of good kids there. That for the best.
1999, you win the 3A title, so it was 13 years in between championships. And what stands out about that team? And you know, you turn of the century and still winning a lot of games, finally getting right back out and getting another championship for you.
Well, we went through some years there that we were really pretty good. We were in 3A always. Mm-hmm. And we'd always end up playing in sub-state. With Conway Springs was really good there for a few years. And we'd play them in the sub-state, and they'd beat us a couple points, and then they'd win the state. And we had several teams during that time that were really good football teams but played somebody that we were – got beat with. And so when we won one finally, then we got back on track and things kind of took off again.
Yeah, so taking off is an understatement with what happened from 2004 to 2009. You had the long 79-game winning streak there. That's a Kansas record that may never be broken. It's number 4 nationally as far as the longest winning streak that you've ever had. But when you look at those teams, 2004 to 2009, and I know 2009 you finished as the runner-up, but your streak came to a close there again in the championship game against Centralia. But what do you attribute to all that success, so many wins during that time, as far as that run was concerned in 2-1A there?
Oh, we just had some really good players. Mm-hmm. You know, a couple of those classes never lost a game in their lifetime, 7th grade, 8th grade through high school. And they were just super athletes. They really cared. They really liked each other. And they did things that they didn't want to do in order to make sure they accomplished what they wanted to accomplish. You know, some of them would come out for track that really weren't track people, but they knew they had to be there to increase their speed, their agility, mobility, and explosiveness. And they did all the little things they had to do so that the big things would happen for them.
You know, I've been here since 2003 covering sports here in North Central Kansas, and I'll argue to the teeth with people if anybody tells me there was a better 2-1A team than the 2007 team that you guys had. You didn't allow any points until sub-state, 20 points all season, had a lot of shutouts there. It was a culmination, but do you feel like that was your best team or one of your best teams? Obviously it was, but as far as that's concerned, how does that team stack up with some of the teams that you've seen in the past there at Smith Center?
Everybody keeps asking me that, who the best team is, and I'm never going to say.
Yeah.
At that time, that team we had was the best team. But those kids were special kids. I think about 7 or 8 of them on that team went on to play college football someplace. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, they were good athletes. They were great athletes and great students and very dedicated, committed, and accomplished more than maybe some other teams, but they were very, very special, yeah.
It was a great group of kids, and I just remember watching some of those games. Our teams that I was covering was already knocked out, so I went up for that St. Francis game, and I couldn't believe how good that group was. But so we've talked about that you won 8 state championships, so 2007 is a very, very good team. All these teams are really good, but was there any of those state championship teams that maybe surprised you the most that they came out and won a state title? Would it have been maybe the next year when you lost some of those seniors from 2007?
Our expectations were that we were going to be good and we were going to win, and that did the little things that we had to do to accomplish the big things. So, you know, it didn't surprise us that it continued, and things just kind kind of went on and developed and just kept going.
That 2008 season, Joe Drape came down from New York and wrote a book about you called Our Boys, Season on the Plains with the Smith Center Redmen. What was it like to be a part of that and have somebody from the outside kind of coming in here? He lived in Smith Center during the time and wrote the book. What was it like to have that kind of into your program during that season?
Well, that was a unique experience. He'd come the year before because we made national news about we beat, I don't know, Plainville pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
And made national news, so he came to Smith Center for an interview. And really, I think he just came for the fun of it because his family, he went to Rockhurst in Kansas City, and his family lived there. So I think he flew in there to have family time and then use this as an excuse for his excursion. But I remember the first time he come in the locker room, I was there and sat down and we started visiting and it just kind of, you know, felt good about each other. And he wrote an article that made the front page of the New York Times. And he told me he took it in a day when there was no other news in the world going on, and the editor chose to put it on the front page. But then things just kind of took off for him, and he called me in the summer, and he says, well, I'm going to be there next year to write a book. I said, Joe, I don't know about that. And he said, well, I'm going to be there. And sure enough, the first day of practice, he showed up at the football field, and he was almost every practice, and he was all around town, met everybody. Everybody liked him, respected him, and brought his family. Mary, his wife, is really a great person. And he brought his young son, Jack Drape. And they lived in New York next to Central Park in a tight apartment. And Jack come out to practice, and he was running the field and didn't have to worry about him. And
yeah.
Joe just kind of let him go, and it was like a learning experience for a young person. And he became a manager with us when he was really, really small, mm-hmm. so that he could go to all the games. Kids took care of him, so it was a great experience for them. And he still calls, and I still call him, and we have a pretty good relationship. And the book he wrote, I thought, was really a good book, very enjoyable, easy to read. And he did a lot of work and a lot of research to write such a book.
I enjoyed the book as well. I think that my favorite part about it was what you're talking about, though, is like he really painted Smith Center and the community, and really you could tell he got to know everybody that was there for sure. So I asked you a little bit ago, Willie, one of the maybe what was a state championship team that you had that maybe surprised you. Is there any season that you can look back at that you maybe didn't make it to state or didn't win a state championship that maybe still grinds at you to this day that you weren't able to get it done in that season?
Oh, there were several, but I've never told anybody this, but when my son was a junior, we won the state. With him and Jeff Simmons and all that group of kids, we won the state when they were juniors, and we lost a great senior class, most of them, but we had those people coming back and thought we were going to be really pretty good, and we were real good until we met Plainville, and that dang Larry Friend beat us before we got into the playoffs. So it was disappointing because everybody had motel rooms and everything scheduled, because there was no doubt we were going to go back, but we got beat and upset, and it was more personal probably because my son was involved in that and some other teams, but
yeah,
that was one that was kind of disappointing.
Hey, you talked about, you know, a lot of those kids from like the 2007 team made it on to the college ranks, but and I'm gonna touch upon a little bit of that here momentarily. But as a coach and a math teacher there at Smith Center for so long, I know you focused and you wanted to play football and win football games. That was the goal, to go out there and do that. But you had probably a bigger goal in life for your players after high school than just in football, but more of teaching them life, right?
Well, that was our major emphasis. The kids would. Everybody say, well, what do you think of that team? How do you evaluate them? And I always told our kids that I'll never evaluate you on what you did. until maybe 5 years after you graduate or 10 years after you graduate. I see that you're a good man and have a good job, a good husband, a good father, and leading a good life. And that's when I will evaluate what kind of job we really did for you. It doesn't have anything to do with football. It has to do with your personal life. And I've kind of lost track of most of them now at my age, but the ones I know around are all good people. They're all doing great jobs. They all have good kids. You know, we haven't had very many that got married and divorced. I don't think last I knew, we only had two in all those years that had any trouble with the law, major trouble with the law. Mm-hmm. And they were all outstanding citizens, and that's what we were trying to make, was good citizens. And so hopefully we accomplished that with a few of them.
As it goes, you have had plenty of your kids, like I said, that have moved on to play college football. And then there's three of them in particular that really come to my mind, because I'm a K-State fan and I watch a lot of K-State. And as far as moving on even past the college level, and, you know, we had Mark Cimino on not too long ago on our show, just kind of talking, and he, you know, kind of discussed his career with Smith Center and how that prepared him for the NFL. And he played 9 seasons of the league. I know Braden Wilson was drafted by the Chiefs, never did play any downs in the NFL. And I know Justin Montgomery went to camp with the Rams and played in NFL Europe. So how much pride do you take, I guess, and not only those guys, but guys moving on and having success on the football field at the next level or even a higher level after that?
Oh, we're happy for all of them. You know, they all deserve what they got because they worked hard to accomplish their life goals. And they did that, and we're real proud of them. And they were all special athletes, special people, and they're good people and doing good things now. A lot of them are giving back, you know, to the next generation, and it really makes you feel good about what they accomplished and what they did.
You know, we're talking with longtime Smith Center football coach Roger Barta here on the Sports Ticket on Katy Country 94. Just a few more things I want to chat with you about. Your son Brooks is one of those players that went on to play at K-State, and you kind of have developed a K-State connection within Smith Center. All those three guys that I mentioned earlier all went to K-State as well, Mark Cimino, Braden Wilson, Justin Montgomery. You have that connection there. Was there something that you had with Bill Snyder as far as a connection? Did he really try to get those Kansas kids and those Smith Center kids to come to K-State?
I don't know. I had a unique deal with Coach Snyder, though. Brooks was recruited by Stan Parrish.
Okay.
And he redshirted his freshman year, and then he left. And back in those days, you know, you never knew. There was no news, no social media.
Mm-hmm.
And you didn't know who was hired anywhere, or I hadn't any idea who K-State had hired. But one night I get a phone call and he says, "This is Bill Snyder out of Iowa City, Iowa." So to me, Iowa City, Iowa was a town that had a recruiting service that called every year.
Okay.
Wanting to know about kids. So I'm thinking, this is a recruiting guy. And pretty soon he started talking, and well, about 15 minutes into it, he was telling me, you know, this is what we're going to do, how we're going to do it. And finally figured out this is a guy that's going to be the next coach at K-State. And we talked, I bet, for 50 minutes or an hour, and got to know each other, and he was telling me all about it and everything, and it was kind of neat to look back on that. I suppose he did that for every kid that he had,
mm-hmm.
because he was that hard a worker, but it was impressive at that time, that point in time. And then I was able to go back and watch Brooks practice and stuff. He mm-hmm. started as a freshman there and played 4 years, and second leading tackler. And Bill never opened practice up to many people. You always had to have permission to go. And I always went and just went to practice, and they always let me in and watched. And, of course, I met all the coaches and became, you know, knew them. And they kind of took care of us. I know Shorty was an equipment manager, and any equipment that they were going to throw out, he'd call and say, "Do you want it?" Because he had married a girl from here anyway. So I'd go get a pickup load of used stuff. ankle braces and girdle pads. And so it was a unique relationship. It really was. And still to this day, when I see Coach Snyder, he's an amazing man. He's, "Coach, how are you? How you doing?" and stuff. He's one of those that never forgets a name, I don't think.
No.
There's some people like that. And he's just a special person.
So you talked about Brooks having success there at K-State, and now your grandson Mason's there, isn't he? He made a Snyder for a year, and now Coach Kleiman's there. And Mason, how much joy do you get out of seeing a grandson there in Manhattan?
Not that special. You know, Pam and I moved from Smith Center to Manhattan, Kansas, to be closer to, you know, our family. And we were able to watch Mason, and our granddaughter goes to school there, too. When this virus hit, we moved back to Smith Center now, and that's where we're at. But it was kind of fun and kind of neat. And he's a good player. He's a good kid, though. That's what I like. He's a good person, I think. He's going to be an outstanding man. He already graduated in 3.5 years, and he's still got 2 years of eligibility left. Mm-hmm. So we'll see what happens.
I talked about Brooks. You know, Brooks has had a great career coaching as well at Holton, and I'm sure you're proud of that. But, you know, you really look at your coaching tree, and Darren Sass has taken over the program in Smith Center and done a lot of good things. You know, guys off the top of my head that I knew that I've covered around here have been like Clint Merritt and Jerry Voorhees, like I mentioned, and the Lamberts have been all over the place in coaching. How much pride do you take in seeing some of your guys maybe taking some of the things they learned from you and moving on and teaching other kids in this state as well?
Oh, we're proud of all of them, you know. It's a matter of, we've always talked about in our practices, you know, as you get older, give back, because so many people have given you something that you can give back. And a lot of them have gone on and been very successful in coaching. And at one time, I knew how many there was. I don't remember now, but quite a few. And there's still quite a few of them out there doing a good job for kids.
And you had a lot of assistant coaches that helped you out in your career as well. I want to give you maybe an opportunity to recognize what they've meant to not only the program but the community as well in this long run of success that you had.
Oh, we went through a lot of coaches early. When I first came here, we had a group of coaches. And Smith Center was kind of a traditional in-and-out for coaches situation, and finally I got some that would stay with me. One that's been with me all through my career is Dennis Hutchison. He was here a year before I was, and he retired the same time I did, and he's a very special coach. Gary Baxter was a special coach for us, and then he took the junior high program, and that was a blessing, because when our kids came up as freshmen, they were well prepared, ready to go. And in the last few years, what was neat is that we had players that went on and played college ball, and then they got into coaching. And they decided when the opportunity came to come back to Smith Center. And so, like the coaches now that we have, all played for us. Mm-hmm. Went out and coached and come back and coaching here again. And they're the reason the program is so successful, and they're raising their families here, and they're back with their parents. And it's really a neat situation. They're a unique group of young people.
And Roger Barta, the longtime head coach of the Smith Center Redmond. Coach, you staying healthy right now? I know you mentioned the virus moving back to Smith Center. You staying healthy and being able to stay away from it?
Well, we hope we are. Yeah. We thought we had a better chance maybe in Smith Center than we did in Manhattan, but mm-hmm. You never know. It's going to happen sometime, I guess. We're staying pretty isolated.
Yep. I think that's probably the best for a lot of people right now. So I know it's different times that we're in, but we certainly enjoy going back and talking with you about your career. We thank you for taking the time to chat about it and wish you nothing but the best down the road, all right?
Thanks a lot, Dusty. It was really neat talking to you. I didn't get to talk to you for a long, long time. Really appreciate what you've done for high school athletics around the area, promoting them and you've done a great job and had a great career, and you should certainly be proud.
Well, I certainly appreciate the kind words there, Coach, and thanks for joining us again to talk about the great career.
State, regional, and national sports talk on your schedule. The Sports Ticket Podcast. Subscribe via Apple, Google, and TuneIn Podcasts or sunflowerstateradio.com.